if you, I'm going to give you a short, well, short in terms of number of slides, 2 hour long slideshow today about some scientific fundamentals. And this slideshow, you don't have to write down every word that's in here because you have access to the slideshow. I just want you to know that it's in a different place. The slideshow is from upstairs. Those, hopefully you've already found all of those, right? Those are in the, on their own page on the Hoffman site. If you go to the Hoffman site, the online lectures and slideshows is where you find those slideshows, right? That's there. The current term lecture recordings is where you find the recordings that I give you. Like today's recording will be posted there, and Monday's recordings are already there from before, okay? Well, notice that there's a scientific fundamental slideshow here. That will become an active link that will be the slideshow I'm giving you today, in case you want to look at that. In other words, when I, especially the metric system table, when I show you that eventually, you don't have to write that all down. You have it up here. All right, let's go to the bulk of the material. Scientific fundamentals, things that are important in science. I'm going to start with distinguishing between quantities and units. These are different from each other, otherwise we wouldn't list them separately, but they're related. Who wants to give me a definition of a quantity, or just explain what a quantity is in general?
Like the amount?
Amount is, if you want to just restrict yourself to one word, that's a pretty good word to choose, yeah. It's a little bit more than that. A quantity is basically anything that you can measure. So amount is kind of ambiguous, because do you mean the number of things, or which is one quantity, but there's all kinds of other quantities as well. Anything that you can measure, though, is a quantity. And so there is no limit to the number of quantities that exist. Thousands and thousands of quantities already out there. And it shouldn't be hard to think of one, therefore. Who wants to think of one? Now, are you being bashful, or is it true that zero people in here have any idea of something that can be measured? Yeah. Mass is a good example of a quantity. Mass I'll talk more about in a minute, specifically. But it's an example of a quantity. What are some other familiar quantities? Other things you can measure? What? Volume? Yes, that's another quantity. What were you going to say? Volume. Still a quantity. What about distance? That's a familiar one, right? Anything that you can measure is a quantity. But how's that different from a unit? What is a unit? In a sense, although how can be misinterpreted, a unit is a predefined parcel in which you measure a corresponding quantity. So, for instance, using distance as a familiar quantity, you can measure, you have a choice, but you can measure it in any of several different units, right? Like a meter, or a mile, or foot. Those are all units, because they're predefined. Each inch is the same size as any other inch, right? You can express a quantity in some number of units of the right type. The unit has to correspond to the quantity, though. You see the distinction between the two? Okay. Let me get more specific then, because for each of these two things, quantities and units, there are two categories. There's two categories of quantities, roughly speaking, and those are fundamental quantities and derived quantities. And fundamental here means not made up of other stuff. They stand on their own as quantities. They're not made up of other quantities. Derived quantities, on the other hand, are made up of other quantities. So a good analogy here is with chemistry. In this sense, atoms are like fundamental quantities, or elements, I should say, are like fundamental quantities. Compounds, Molecules, on the other hand, which are made up of atoms, are like derived quantities. So, for instance, a hydrogen atom would be like a fundamental quantity. A hydrogen molecule, which is two hydrogen atoms hooked together, is like a derived quantity. And I use that specific example because some molecules are a combination of different kinds of atoms, right? Like water. But not always true. All molecules are multiple atoms, but sometimes it's multiple versions of the same atom, like a hydrogen molecule. And that can be true for quantities as well. All right? I told you that there's no limit to the number of quantities in the universe, but it's kind of shocking how few fundamental quantities there are. I forget the exact number, 9 or 11 or so, I can't remember, but there's very few fundamental quantities. The vast majority of quantities are derived quantities that are simply made up of some of those fundamental quantities. The best thing here is to think about some examples. So, what would be an example of a fundamental quantity? Any idea? Well, time is a fundamental quantity. Distance, which we've already used, is fundamental. It's not made up of other stuff, right? Distance, by the way, distance goes by a lot of different names, but it's always distance, really. It's still the same quantity. For instance, width, height, depth, those or length, those are all distances, really. How far apart two points are in space is distance. That's not made up of other things. But consider volume. You mentioned volume as an example of a quantity. Is that derived or fundamental?
Derived.
Why is it derived? It is derived, but why?
Because it's made up, made up of different molecules in front of the quantity.
It's made up of other quantities. Specifically, it's made up of three distances, right? Volume is three-dimensional distance. So it's length times width times height is really distance times distance times distance. So this is like a molecule that's made up of three atoms of the same type. Right? Doesn't matter that they're the same type. If there are two or more quantities that make up a quantity, then that quantity that's made up of those is derived, not fundamental. Now think about speed as another example of a quantity. Is that fundamental or derived? Why derived? Why? Yes. By the way, it's best... Did everyone hear what she said? Of course not. I am used to speaking loudly because I do it for a living, but most people aren't. When you speak, try to speak as loudly as I am so everyone can hear. And thanks for using yourself as an example. Speed includes distance and time, right? It's distance divided by time. So that shows you that it's a derived quantity because it's made up of two quantities. In this case, two different quantities. But it doesn't have to be two different ones. Area is derived because it's two distances, length and width. So clear, is that clear about difference between fundamental and derived? Okay, for any given quantity, it is either fundamental or derived, not both, right? If it is fundamental, whatever quantity you're thinking of, you can have all kinds of choices of units for it. But if it's a proper unit for a fundamental quantity, then that makes the unit also fundamental. So there are fundamental units and derived units, but fundamental units are units of fundamental quantities. Derived units are units of derived quantities. Speed, for instance, we just said is a derived quantity, right? There's all kinds of choices for speed. Kilometer per second, that tells you that it's that the units are derived, right? Because the unit contains two units. Kilometers is units, seconds is units. So that's the difference. Now, I usually ask whether people understand this, and I get almost unanimous yeses. But then the first quiz comes, and that tells a different story. So stop me if you don't understand it. Don't just say yes so that I'll go on. All right? Relatedly, this first quiz that's coming up, I hope this doesn't happen, but it always does. It is likely going to be your lowest scoring of all the quizzes. So don't freak out if that happens. That happens just about every term. And I think it probably has to do with the fact that so many people hate math, and it's the only one that involves any math. All right? But it's not going to be the end of the term if you bomb that one. Don't worry. Just strive not to. Yeah, go ahead.
In the same thing, just trying to think, I'm telling you, you have a square meter.
Yeah.
It's a square meter, so you have two elements playing a role here. So when you say square meter, it's also a derived...
It's a derived unit that corresponds to a derived quantity area. Okay? Since the square meter is a meter squared, it's a meter times a meter. There's 2 meters in there. And that's what makes it derived. They don't have to be different from each other, but it's 2 or more units, and therefore the unit is derived. Everyone else have that understanding? All right. Let's look at some example important quantities used in not just biology, science in general. Time, as I said, that's an example of a fundamental. Not all of these are the same category, but time is fundamental. And therefore, any legitimate time unit is fundamental, right? There's a correspondence between units and quantities as far as whether it's fundamental or derived. When you talk about choices of units, though, you know, for instance, hours, minutes, seconds, those are all units of time. Not only are there multiple choices of units you have to choose from, but there are even multiple overall systems of units that you can choose from. And nowadays, there's really only 2 major systems that are in use. It would be much better if there were only one, and it's almost that case. I'm talking about the metric system and the silly system that America, unfortunately, uses. There's 2 holdouts in the world. America and Myanmar, I think, are the only 2 countries who just won't give in, and they have not officially adopted the metric system, despite the fact that it is much easier, and it's universally used by scientists. Even American scientists use the metric system, but the country doesn't, which is a shame, really. In fact, it's now been 49 years since I was in 5th grade, and I remember one of the 5th grade days, going to class, and the teacher said, "Today we're going to learn the metric system, and you need to really pay attention because pretty soon that's all we'll be using." Well, it's 5 decades later, and we're no closer to adopting the metric system, even though it is far superior. And the reason that it is so simple compared to this silly system that you really only know part of. You've lived with it your whole life and you don't even know the whole silly system. I'll try to convince you of that. The reason the metric system by comparison is so much easier though is because it is a decimal system. Decimal means based on 10, powers of 10. So it's an easy matter, once you're used to the system, to calculate in your head how many millimeters there are in a kilometer. You know, a millimeter is only this big. A kilometer is pretty long distance. Couldn't you? I forgot to talk to you again. That's all right. You'll be here. Yeah, that's what they're for. All right. Let's say a centimeter, which is about this big, can easily calculate how many centimeters are in a kilometer, because it's all powers of tens, just basically moving decimal points. But if I ask you how many inches there are in a mile, in the silly system you grew up with, it's going to be a harder calculation, right? And you either have to have that memorized, or you have to use pen and paper or a calculator. It's just difficult. Or correspondingly, how many teaspoons are in a gallon? Well, you can do the math, but it's not as nearly as easy. It's an inconvenient system. But anyway, for any given quantity, you have choices of silly units or metric units, including time. But time is an exception here to the decimal nature of the metric system. For all the other quantities, the units in the metric system are decimal. Not so for time. We still use normal time. I mean, the time you're used to in the metric system as well. So a metric minute is the same as a silly minute. And it's not, that doesn't go by tens. It's by 60s, right? 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, so on. All the rest of them, though, based on tens. Mass. You mentioned mass as an example of a quantity, which is an important one. What is mass, though, first of all? I don't mean is it fundamental or derived. I mean, what is the definition of mass? What do you think of as mass?
How much matter is in
mass? Exactly. It's the amount of matter contained in a sample, which is not the same thing as the number of atoms it's made out of. That's a quantity on its own. But that's not mass. The mass is the amount of material that a substance contains, a sample contains. Okay? Now, speaking of the silly system that you probably don't know completely, what is the silly system unit of mass?
Slug.
The slug. Did you know that from living, or did you listen ahead?
Good.
Yes, it is the slug, and American engineers used to use the slug. Now they are metric, so they use the metric unit of mass, which is what?
Grams,
exactly. Now, mass is the amount of material. That is not the same thing as weight, which is also a quantity, of course. But people confuse these all the time, even people that should know better. If you consider a standing on a bathroom scale, what you're measuring directly is your weight. Weights are forces. All weights are forces. Not all forces are weights. But weight is a specific kind of force. It's weight is the force due to gravity. And so what you call your weight is really the force that you're exerting on the surface of the earth because of the gravitational attraction between you and the earth. We say we lose weight. We don't lose weight. We lose mass. And because of that, we therefore exert less weight. Weight is a force. By the way, speaking of weight, is it fundamental or derived? It is derived. Can you explain why? All weights are forces.
Okay.
And so what is F equal?
Yeah.
Right, F equals MA. And who told us that? Newton. So this, spelling it this way, F equals MA, tells you that weight, which is a force, must be derived, right? Because it's made up of mass and acceleration. In fact, acceleration by itself is already derived. because it's distance per time per time. So force has really four quantities in it, derived. And therefore any unit of weight is also derived. Speaking of units of weight, what is the silly system unit, or one unit from the silly system?
Pounds,
for instance. Yeah, you could be ounces, pounds. There's a choice even within the system. But pounds, and, you know, if you do stand on that bathroom scale, I said that you were directly measuring your weight, because what you're doing is exerting the force onto the springs of the scale, causing the dial to move, right? And therefore, the machine should read out in units that are weight. Now, because the United States refuses to switch systems, the ones that the bathroom scales that are shipped here for American use usually have two rows of numbers on them, right? The bigger numbers are the pounds. That's correct. Pounds are units of weight. But then you have the smaller numbers, which are what units? Kilograms, which shouldn't be there, because kilograms is not a unit of weight. It's a unit of mass. Now, the reason that the companies get away with this is because they're making the reasonable assumption that you're only ever going to be using that bathroom scale on the surface of the earth. So they can assume the gravitational attraction and make the calculation and put it in terms of mass. But if you do the thought experiment of standing on that scale here on Earth and then going to the moon and standing on the same scale, your mass has not changed. You're made of the same stuff. But your weight will register as only about 1/6 as much. Well, 1/6 as many pounds would be correct, because your weight is less. But it'll also say that your mass in kilograms is less, and that's not right. You see what I'm saying there? Because your mass has not changed. So, if you want to give your weight in to someone in metric units, you wouldn't use kilograms, even though almost everyone does. What is the metric unit of weight? The Newton, in his honor. Right? We call it the Newton. So you should be keeping that those things separate in your mind, even though scientists will go back and forth between these two all the time. Okay. Length. We talked about length already. Goes by many names, but it's fundamental. What about silly units for length?
A yard.
Yard. A rod. Centimeters is not the silly system. That's the metric system. But within the silly system, you have all kinds, right? Inch, feet, miles, rods, furlongs, bunch of units. In the metric system, though, what is the base unit of distance or length? Same thing. The meter, right? Volume. We already said that's derived, right? Because it's made up of distances. And so any volume unit is derived, whether it's teaspoons, tablespoons, cups, gallons. Those are all silly system units. Or, in metric, what is the unit of volume? The base unit. The liter. Right. And force, we've already talked about a little bit. All weights are forces. Well, in metric, as I said, it's a Newton. In the silly system, it could be foot-pounds. There's different choices there, too. Inch-pounds, and so on. Okay, temperature. Well, temperature, first of all, is just like mass and weight get confused by a lot of people. They're related, but definitely different, importantly. Just like that, a lot of people also confuse temperature and heat. which are related, but importantly different. Heat, by the way, is an example of an extensive property, whereas temperature is an example of an intensive property. An extensive property is one for which the extent, meaning how much you have of a sample, matters. And heat's an example of that. Heat is the energy of motion of the particles in a sample. Any material sample is made up of particles, right? Atoms and molecules and so on. They're all moving, and that movement is thermal energy. Well, the more particles you have, the bigger your sample is, the more you have of heat, therefore, or thermal energy. On the other hand, temperature is proportional to the average speed of the particles in a sample. And the word average there is important, because how do you compute an average? Measure each speed individually in this case, and then divide by the number of particles, right? When you divide by the number of particles, that eliminates the dependency on the size of the sample. That's why it's an intensive property. The intensity matters, not the amount of stuff. So a familiar example would be to consider a swimming pool versus a glass of water. You can measure the temperature of both, right? Well, let's first just start with the pool. You have an empty glass, and you submerge it in the pool, take a one glass sample from the pool. If you take the temperature of the glass of water immediately, it should equal the temperature of the pool. They both have the same average speed of the particles that they're made up of, and therefore the same temperature. But the pool contains a hell of a lot more water than the glass does, and therefore a hell of a lot more particles, each of which is moving and has that energy of motion, and therefore the pool contains a hell of a lot more heat than the glass of water does. All right, see the difference? So temperature is an average, and throughout history there have been dozens of different temperature scales used. Nowadays it's really down to three biggies. What do we use in the silly system? Fahrenheit. The Fahrenheit scale, which has gradations. What are the units in the Fahrenheit scale? The units of temperature in the Fahrenheit scale. Almost. Degrees Fahrenheit. So they are not just degrees. You never write a degree symbol by itself. It's degrees F, degrees Fahrenheit. The metric system actually has two different scales. One of which is the Celsius scale. And that's the proper word nowadays, but it used to be called the centigrade scale, which I still prefer because the word actually describes how it was made. Centigrade, centi means 100, and grade refers to little tick marks. So the units are degrees Celsius or degrees centigrade. But the reason it's centigrade is because this scale is based on water. And so you have some temperature at which water freezes. Well, that was defined when the scale was invented as 0 degrees Celsius. And then you have a temperature at which water boils, and that was defined as 100 degrees Celsius. And there's 100 tick marks between them, therefore centigrade. So it's based on water. Of course, it's an artificial. We just ran, you know, we chose water as a substance to base this on. Water will still boil in Fahrenheit and still freeze in Fahrenheit, right? It's just different values for those units. What is the corresponding freezing point in Fahrenheit? Well, it doesn't happen here very often, but it does. But water does freeze. 32 degrees Fahrenheit. What about boiling? Were you not taught this? 212. Notice that there are 180 tick marks between 32 and 212. Which is why if you look up, or if you've learned conversions between Fahrenheit and Celsius in either direction, it's going to involve 1.8, either multiplying by or dividing by 1.8, because 180 divided by 100 is 1.8. So those are just relative scales. But the other metric temperature scale is called what? The Kelvin scale, which can also be called the absolute temperature scale. And like the other scales, it has units. What are the units called?
We just call it K.
K is an abbreviation, though. I have someone say degrees Kelvin, just at least guessing, you know, by analogy with these. It's not degrees Kelvin, so don't say that and don't write that. The units for the Kelvin scale are called Kelvins, which is abbreviated capital K, but no degree sign. So you don't say 180 degrees Kelvin, you say 180 Kelvins, just like you say 180 feet for a different quantity. Okay, well, I said that this is also called the absolute temperature scale because this is not relative. This is not based on some arbitrary thing. This is based on the actual definition of temperature. When I said that temperature is proportional to the amount of, to the average speed of the particles, that means zero is absolutely meaningful in this scale. Zero on Celsius, that's not the lowest temperature you can get, right? That's just the temperature at which water freezes. You can get a lot colder than that. Similarly for zero on Fahrenheit. But zero on the Kelvin scale is absolute zero, because that means no movement of particles at all. You can't get negative movement, right? Either they're stopped completely or they're moving. And if they're moving, it's something above zero. So you can't get colder than zero Kelvins. The nice thing about these two metric scales is that they have units that are identical in size. So a Kelvin is exactly the same size as a degree Celsius. They're just offset from each other with respect to where the zero is. And the zero Kelvin, absolute zero in other words, is at negative 273.15 degrees Celsius. So you can't get colder than that. All right, but if you bring it up 1 degree centigrade, that's exactly the same as bringing it up 1 Kelvin. And water freezes, therefore, at 273.15 Kelvins and so on. Okay, number of particles. This is another example of one of those few fundamental quantities, like time, for instance. It's not made up of other things. It's simply counting things, right? We count things all the time. And like all the other quantities, there's choices of units. You can count by ones, right? You can say that there's 13 of whatever you're counting. When you have a lot of things you need to count, you sometimes use bigger units like dozens, right? Or millions. But those are all units of numbers of particles. The particles, the word particle implies that it's small. It doesn't have to be. A planet is a particle. But the point is you're counting discrete, countable things for number of particles. Now, in science, in chemistry and biology, we are often concerned with the number of particles that are tiny from our point of view. Atoms or molecules. And we could count those in ones or in dozens, but it's still going to be a huge number, even if we use dozens, because atoms are so tiny that it takes trillions of them just to have enough to see and to work with. And therefore, if you're using values to display the number of atoms that you have, the numbers are going to be huge. And it just becomes a pain in the ass to write huge numbers over and over. Right? And that's why we have a special unit for number of particles called the mole. Notice it's part of the word molecule. What is a mole equal to? What is the number for a mole known as? Anyone know? That's the abbreviation. It's kind of a silly abbreviation. MOL saves you a lot of time by not writing that E. But yes, it is MOL. The word is MOLE. The value of a mole is Avogadro's number. Oops, Avo, I think. But the value of Avogadro's number is, at least to four places, is 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd power. That is a huge number. A billion, which is huge, is tiny in comparison to this. Right? A billion is just 10 to the ninth. This is a lot bigger exponent. So a trillion is a billion is a tiny fraction of a mole. Why do we have such a huge number? Because when you're counting things that are so tiny that it takes quadrillions of them to see, you want to use a big number to express them in. But the mole itself is simply a number, just like dozen means 12 and only 12. Dozen by itself doesn't tell you what you're counting, right? It just means there's 12 of them. And similarly, a mole simply means this number. But there's a correspondence between this value and what we see on this version of the periodic table in red numbers. It won't always be red, but these red numbers in this periodic table are examples of what are called atomic mass. Each element has its own atomic mass. And you can think of this as having either of two units. One way is to think of it as having what's called an atomic mass unit. An atomic mass unit is a unit of mass for an individual atom. And so sodium, for instance, Na, listed here as 22.989707, that means if you have exactly one sodium atom, it would have a mass equal to that number of atomic mass units. But the other more practical way of using that number is to think of it as having units of grams per mole. And what that means is that if you use a scale and carefully measure out exactly 22.989707 grams of sodium, pure sodium, then that would mean you have one mole of sodium in front of you. In other words, the number of particles that you would have of sodium is that number, 22 point whatever, times 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. A hell of a big number of particles, but that's what grams per mole means. Okay, so it's a practical way. You don't get in there and count real atoms, but you can get to it by making careful measurements of mass. Alrighty, let's go on now to the metric system. Go ahead.
So, unless we just what you just said, can we then say that the grounds per mole of that particle is, we can say it is a fundamental quantity.
No, because the phrase grams per mole should tell you that it's derived, because it's grams and moles that are included in there. Yeah. Let's go to the metric system now and study its particulars. The metric system is represented here in this table, but there are no units given. Only prefixes, like kilo, mega, and so on. Notice the dash after them showing that they're prefixes. You never use any of these words by themselves. They are just a prefix that you attach before the word for the unit itself. The units aren't shown because the unit depends on what quantity you're dealing with. Okay, but you always use these prefixes regardless of the actual quantity you're using. If the quantity you're interested in is distance, for instance, then the unit, the base unit, would be the meter. And the base unit in this table is represented in the middle row here, where there is no prefix. So the meter is a unit by itself without a prefix. That's the base unit for distance. And that's a convenient distance to use for certain measurements, right? It wouldn't be convenient, though, to use the meter to measure the diameter of one of your hairs. It's an inappropriate size. So in addition to the base unit for any of the various quantities, the metric system gives us all kinds of other choices of units for the same quantity that are some number, some power of 10 times or divided by that base. This is what I meant by saying that the metric system is a decimal system. Okay, so the base here, the middle row, corresponds to a magnitude or a size of 10 to the 0. What is 10 to the 0 equal? 10 to the 0. It equals 1. Anything other than 0 raised to the 0 power equals 1. And so it's listed there because all these other magnitudes are powers of 10 as well. Speaking of a power of 10, in science we call a change that involves one step in the exponent of 10, we call that an order of magnitude. For instance, 10 compared to 1. 10 is 10 times bigger than 1, right? Well, 10 is one order of magnitude bigger than 1, because 10 to the 1 power is 10, 10 to the 0 power is 1. You go up by one exponent there. 100 is two orders of magnitude bigger than 10, than 1. You see that? Because 100 is 10 squared compared to 10 to the 0. That's two steps in the exponent. So that's what an order of magnitude is. And notice that these rows are spaced three orders of magnitude apart. The base is 10 to the 0. One up from that is 10 to the 3rd, not 10 to the 1. So that's three orders of magnitude bigger. Three orders of magnitude is 1,000 times bigger. And that's what you have for kilo. That's what kilo means. 1,000 times bigger than the base. Which means that it would require 1,000 of the base unit to equal 1 kilo unit. And I'm just using unit as generic here. For a specific example, it takes 1,000 meters to equal 1 kilometer. For volume, 1,000 liters to equal 1 kiloliter, and so on. All right, so that's three orders of magnitude to kilo. You can go up three more orders of magnitude to get to mega. 10 to the 6th is a million times as big. That's what mega means, a million times as big as the base, which is 1,000 times as big as kilo, but compared to the base, it's a million times as big. And then it goes up from there. All of these ones above the base row are making the unit bigger. And if you notice the prefix words and the symbols, because we don't usually write out the prefix, or we often don't, we use symbols as well. Notice that all of these symbols except one are capital letters above the middle row, above the base. And that's not by accident, that's by design. That's to remind us, by that capital letter, that this is a bigger unit than the base. Now, to be consistent, they would have used capital K for kilo rather than small k, but they couldn't do that. Why? Because the Kelvin already exists as capital K. You can't have ambiguity in the symbols. Okay. Conversely, all the symbols and corresponding prefix names below the base are used lowercase to remind us that they're making it smaller than the base unit. But it's still three orders of magnitude steps. From the base down one is milli. Milli means 1/1000th of. That means there's 1,000 milliliters in 1 liter. Okay? And so on, by three orders of magnitude steps. Well, this whole range, from yocto to yotta, is enormous when you think about orders of magnitude. Going from 10 to the negative 24th to 10 to the 24th. That's 48 orders of magnitude, which is so big that there's a unit for everyone, no matter what you're measuring. Whether you're measuring cosmically big things or subatomic particles, there is a unit that's appropriately sized within that range. All right? The range is so vast that really a lot of it isn't even appropriate for biology. It's either too small for biology to make sense or too big. And that's why in the next slide, which is also a table, some of the rows are red. Those ones you don't have to learn. For biology, they're just too big or too small. The white ones are ones that were on that previous table. The yellow ones weren't on the previous table. Both the white and the yellow you have to know. So know those by next week. All right? The yellow ones weren't inserted in the previous table because that last table had steps, all of which were three orders of magnitude apart. Three powers of 10. But right around the base, either above or below the base, we've decided that let's stick in a couple more options of units, because a jump from a meter to a kilometer is pretty big. It would be nice to have some in-between units to use as well. So we go up by one order of magnitude on the yellows. Deca with a K means 10 times as big as the base. So one decameter equals 10 meters. All right? Don't confuse deca with deci, which is below the base and therefore smaller. Deci is 1/10 of the base. So it takes 10 decimeters to equal 1 meter. And then hecto means 100 of. So a hecto minute, for instance, is 100 minutes. Centi means 1/100th. 1/100th of a dollar is a centidollar, which is why a penny is called a cent. Centi means 1/100th. Okay, so the white ones and the yellow ones are the ones that you need to memorize the values for. But memorize these all in relation to the base, which is what all these values are. Those are in relation to the base. And I'll explain why I'm saying that in the next section. Okay, so remember, you already have this up there. You don't need to copy this down. Yeah.
We are saying that the order of magnitude is dependent on the exponents.
That's right. One order of magnitude in science is one step in the exponent of 10. So the difference between 10 to the 27th and 10 to the 28th, that's one order of magnitude difference. Okay? All right. Next up is a topic called dimensional analysis. And dimensional analysis is used in science for multiple reasons, but I'm only going to concern ourselves with one of the reasons we use dimensional analysis for this course, which is to use it for the purpose of conversion problems. Okay? First, the reason that dimensional analysis got its name is because dimension is another name for unit. Dimensional analysis involves units. And typically students do not want to go through this process. They will do anything they can, for the typical student, from writing down units, because you don't enter units in a calculator, and after all, that's what you're going to do, right? You're just going to enter numbers into a calculator. Why do you care about the units? Well, the answer is because you can easily get the wrong answer if you don't keep track of the units. So dimensional analysis, with its careful taking care of units, is a way to make sure you're doing a conversion problem correctly. This example is a conversion problem using distance as the quantity. Notice it says, how many millimeters are in 150 point miles? Made a point of saying point there because that decimal point there is important. I'll get into that a little bit later. But 150 miles is a distance, right? It's a measurement of a distance. A conversion problem does not change what you have as the quantity. That distance that we have here is not going to change. We're not changing the distance. We're converting it to other units. But it's exactly the same. It has to be exactly the same distance after we convert as it was before. Is that clear? Okay. Well, the reason I say that is because, mathematically speaking, dimensional analysis for conversion is really just serial multiplication, meaning multiplying one thing after another in series. Okay? Now think about how math works, or multiplication, I mean, specifically. If you start with something, and I tell you that you need to multiply it by a bunch of things, but it's not going to change the value by the time you get to the end, then what has to be true of that multiplication? You're starting with some value, you're going to multiply it by a bunch of different things, and you're going to end up with the same value. What has to be true of those things you're multiplying by? They have to be equal to 1. Right? 1 is the only thing that you can multiply something by in math to get the same answer. It's the multiplicative identity. Okay? Now the reason I'm bothering to say this is because of these factors that we see here involved in a conversion problem. Factor, by the way, speaking of math, means something specific. Factors are things that are multiplied together, as opposed, for instance, to addends. 3 plus 4, the 3 and the 4 are addends because they're added together. 3 times 4, 3 and 4 are factors because they're being multiplied. And everything you see in parentheses here is individually a factor because it's being multiplied by the others. There's two categories of factors here, though. This one on the left is the special factor because it's simply what is given to begin with in the problem. That's your distance in this case. It's given in the problem, okay? All the other factors are examples of conversion factors. So back to what I was saying about the distance not changing. You have a certain distance, in this case 150 miles. That distance is not going to change even though you're multiplying it by a bunch of things. Well, if all of the things you multiply it by are one, the distance will not change. And that's what conversion factors are. Different ways of expressing the value one in fraction form. Notice all these conversion factors are fractions. Well, if I tell you that a fraction without revealing the fraction is equal to 1, what do you know about that fraction? Everyone hear that? Okay, yes, that's right. Only if the numerator and denominator are equal and both non-zero. They can be any number other than zero, but if they're the same, top and bottom, then the fraction equals one, right? So there's infinitely many ways you can express one. 14/14, a mole over a mole, whatever, right? As long as the top and bottom equal. Well, in all these conversion factors, the top does equal the bottom. It's just expressed in different units. All right, that's why it equals 1, though. So you start with this first factor, which is your distance, and you multiply it by 1 over and over, you end up with the same distance, just in a different unit. Is that all clear? Okay, then let's go through the process, which is not unique to this example. The process of using dimensional analysis for a conversion problem is kind of automatic once you learn it. In other words, you do it the same way for any given conversion problem. Step one is always the same, which is simply to start with what you're given, the original measurement. In this case, it's 150 miles, right? But it's important to have that decimal point in there. Miles, by the way, is MI, not M. That's M is meters. Now, since I know that all these conversion factors will be fractions, just for consistency, I'm going to make this a fraction. You can make anything a fraction by putting it over one. You don't have to do that. I just do it. But that's how you always start a problem like this, with what you have. The goal is to express this distance in millimeters, meaning your answer is not going to be right unless the only units that you have in your answer are millimeters. That's the goal. You can take any number of steps to get there. It depends on what your knowledge is. But the important point is that miles cannot be in your answer, or the answer is wrong, right? It's not asking for miles. Therefore, this second step is always the same as well. And it doesn't involve any numbers. It simply involves getting rid of a unit that you know should not be in the answer. In this case, the unit is miles, and it happens to be upstairs. How do you get rid of it? With fractions? How do you cancel it? Right, by putting it in a denominator. So that's what you should do. Make yourself an empty fraction. Don't worry about any numbers. You have to get rid of miles, which are currently upstairs. Put them downstairs. That's step two. Now also, before you concern yourself with any numbers, you want to choose another unit. This conversion factor has to equal one, so you have to have another unit that you're converting to within that factor. And you could use anything you want. You could go straight to millimeters if you knew the correct values and you'd be done in one step. But most people don't have that one memorized between miles and millimeters. So, we'll go with one that maybe you learned with the silly system. Like, do you know how many feet there are in a mile? Did you memorize that as a kid? It's 5,280. Isn't that convenient? No, it's not. But you could do that. Instead, I chose yards, 1,760 yards per mile. But no numbers yet, just choose another unit. We're going to go to yards. All right? Here, I need to make an important point about two units of the same whole. in any of these individual conversion factors, you have one whole expressed in two different units, right? One of the units is bigger than the other. Has nothing to do whether it's upstairs or downstairs. One is bigger than the other, though, right? Now just think about this in common sense terms. If you have a smaller unit, you're going to have more of them in that whole, correct? If you have a larger unit, you're going to have a smaller number of them. Just like in the old pizzeria joke. The guy orders the pizza and the pizzeria owner asks whether he wants it cut into 6 slices or 8. He says, better make it 8 because I'm very hungry. Well, it's the same amount of pizza, right? You're just using different size units. But it's 8 because it takes more of the smaller units to equal the whole pie than 6, which are bigger units. So within one fraction, one conversion factor, whichever the smaller unit is always going to have the bigger number associated with it. Because top has to equal bottom. Yards are bigger, smaller than miles, right? So it's going to have the bigger number, 1,760 yards in 1 mile. You could stop there, but you wouldn't be done, right? The miles have canceled. If you stopped there, your answer would be in yards. And that's why dimensional analysis tells you you're not done. You wouldn't know that if you don't bother with the units. So you just continue this process. Now you need to get rid of yards. There in the top, you put them in the bottom. Almost unthinkingly, just to cancel them. Then choose another unit. In this case, I chose to go from yards to feet. Once again, the smaller unit gets the bigger number. Feet are smaller, there's 3 of them in 1 yard. Now we're going to get rid of feet and go to inches. And this is important in this particular example. This is not just a distance conversion. It's a conversion between silly distance and metric distance. It's a change in whole systems. And when you're dealing with distance, converting between silly or metric or in either direction, it's useful to make use of this particular conversion factor. And the reason that's so valuable is because it's not an approximation. In other words, this 2.54 is not rounded. You can write it as 2.54 or 2.54 followed by a million zeros. It has infinite resolution because it's exact. 2.54 centimeters exactly equals 1 inch. And that's important if you're trying to go between systems because centimeters is a metric unit, inches is a silly unit. All right? So that's why I was working my way toward inch so I can get out of the silly system. And 1 inch always equals 2.0. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not there yet. 12 inches in 1 foot. Now when I get to inches to centimeters, it's 2.54 centimeters in 1 inch. If I stop now, everything has canceled except centimeters. That's what my answer would be in. That's why I know I'm not done yet. But I'm now in the metric system at least. Once you are experienced with the metric system, it's an easy matter to go directly from centimeters to, in this case, millimeters, where we want to be. But don't do that when you're first learning the metric system, because you're going to confuse yourself when it comes to numbers. You haven't memorized all those numbers yet from the table, but you will. All right, the values of the prefixes, those are all based on their relationship to the base, not to each other. So that's why I don't want you to go from one place into the metric system to another in one step. Instead, once you're in the metric system, centimeters, go from where you are temporarily to the base, which is just meters. And that way you can take advantage of your knowledge, once you know it, of the fact that centi means 1/100th of the base. Centi is the smaller one, so it gets the bigger number, 100 centimeters in 1 meter. And then once you're at the base, you can simply go from the base to where you need to be, which in this case is millimeters. And once again, you can use your knowledge of what milli means. Milli means 1/1000th of the base. It's the smaller one. So it takes 1,000 of them to equal 1 meter. And if you go through all of that, which most students don't like to do, then you can confirm with yourself that everything cancels except the only unit that's supposed to be in the answer, millimeters. If you only write numbers, but write it down step by step, you could flip one of these upside down, which would make the answer not only wrong, but totally wrong. I mean, laughably wrong. And worth 0 points. So don't do that. Write all the units out. This is not the end of the process, though. This is just the setup. And the setup should confirm that you have done it correctly if everything cancels except the desired units. Now we have to go through with actually calculating it. And you can make a mistake even using a calculator, and I'm not talking about punching in the wrong numbers. I'm talking about using the calculator incorrectly. You should, we're dealing with only multiplication and division here. There's no addition or subtraction. And in the hierarchy of mathematical operations in math, different operations have different precedents. Well, multiplication and division are done before addition and subtraction, but we're not dealing with any addition or subtraction. Multiplication and division are equal in their precedence. So it doesn't matter what order you do them when you put them into a calculator. All right? In other words, you could enter this as 3 divided by 100 times 1,000 times 150, but why would you randomly go around? You're likely to forget a number. The point is, since it can be in any order, you can simply work left to right at the top and left to right on the bottom, and importantly, hit equals only one time at the end. And as long as you're hitting multiply for each of the top ones and divide by for all of the bottom ones, then it'll be a correct answer when you finally do hit equals. And you don't have to worry about the ones because they don't change anything. You don't have to bother entering them, right? So in other words, I don't have a calculator in front of me, but someone enter 150 times 1760 times 3 times 12 times 2.54 times 1,000 divided by 100 equals. And see whether you come up with the number that's to the right of that. Is that what it came up with? Okay, the calculator gives you an incorrect answer for 2 reasons. One is that it has no idea what units you're dealing with, right? It doesn't give you any units. It gives you a magnitude, which is just the size part of the answer. The number here. It gives you 241401600. That's wrong if that's what you write down. It's wrong because it doesn't have any units. But it's also wrong even if you put the units, which is the mm, because we are not justified in using all of these digits as significant figures. This is another point of this lecture is about significant figures. Significant figures has to do with resolution, which I'll talk about in just a minute. But the calculator doesn't worry about that either. It simply does the math. All of these conversion factor numbers are exact. And therefore, they have infinite number of significant figures. In other words, none of these constrains you in any way. But the original value, the measurement itself, 150, does have a limit to its number of significant figures. And in dimensional analysis problems, you can't have an answer that has more significant figures than whichever number you used in the process that has the fewest. Okay, so you have to go with whatever has the fewest number of significant figures. This is why this decimal point matters here after the 150. Because zeros are ambiguous with respect to significant figures. Now, if I write 151, there's no zero digits here. So we know that all three of these are significant figures. And therefore, if we used this instead of 150, we would know our answer, even without a decimal point, would have to have three significant figures, no more. But when I write 150 without putting any dot, that trailing zero is ambiguous. We can't tell from looking at it whether it is significant or not. Okay? And that's why standard notation, which is 150, is not what we want to use. Instead, we want to use scientific notation. There's really two reasons why we want to use scientific notation, which it has the form some number, point, some number, you know, like 3.45, times 10 to some power. That's an example of a scientific notation number. Like I said, there's two reasons we do this. One is much more important than the other. The less important reason to use scientific notation is simply that it's convenient. If you're dealing with really big numbers, it's a pain in the ass to write all those zeros at the end over and over. If you're dealing with very tiny numbers, a tiny fraction of one, it's a pain in the ass to write 0. Many, many zeros and then finally a non-zero number. So if you express those very large or very small numbers in scientific notation, it's just easier. But there's a much more important reason why we use it, and that's because scientific notation eliminates the ambiguity with respect to zeros when it comes to significant figures. Okay? What I mean by that is whatever comes before the x in times 10 to the whatever, you don't have to worry whether they're zeros or not. However many digits there are before the x, that's how many significant figures are in that number. And so in standard notation, 150, that has at least two. But it could have two or it could have three depending on the zero. If you write, if it is actually two only, then you would write that in scientific notation as 1.5 times 10 to the second. You see that? Notice that there's exactly two numbers here, therefore it's two significant figures. But if the zero is actually significant, you would write it in scientific notation as 1.50 times 10 squared. The calculator sees these as the same value, but this one has three significant figures, not two. That's the real reason why we use scientific notation, the important reason. All clear on that. And this is why this whole number that the calculator spits out is wrong. We can't have more resolution than we started with. You know, just like if you have a very low resolution camera and you take a shot of it, you're never going to get higher resolution by printing that. No matter how you do it, you can't get more resolution than you started with. Similarly with measurements. So this is what constrains us. The 150 point, that point means that zero is significant here. So we have exactly three significant figures. All of these have infinite, so they don't constrain us. Therefore, the answer has to have exactly three significant figures. Well, the 2, the 4, and the 1 are significant. But then you go to the first one that's not significant and determine whether it should be rounded or not. This is a 4, so it shouldn't be rounded. And there, but the answer is not 241, because these placeholders are still important. It's 241 million, right? Which you would write in scientific notation as 2.141 times 10 to the 8th. Because you have to move this decimal point 8 steps to get over to there. And writing it this way shows you there's exactly 3 significant figures, which is as many as you're allowed to use in your answer. So all of that clear. Now, this is where I usually ask whether you think you could, within 1 week, you'll be able to do one of these problems. And yes, everyone says yes. And very few people actually do it successfully. So should I do one more example? Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
And some question. I learned more in the metric system. So it's kind of, I'm trying to really try and merge the silicon system, the yards and stuff. So a question is that with the 150 miles.
Right.
Are we saying, how did we convert this to yards? Are we going back to the metric table?
Not metric. No, because all of these up to this point are silly units. Miles, yards, feet, inches, those are all in the silly system. We're not, we don't get to the metric until finally we use this one to go from inches to centimeters. Now we're in the metric system. And then these last few steps, we go from metric to metric, just different places in the metric system.
So my question then would be, how were you able to convert 150 miles to 1760 yards?
Oh, because 1760 is one that you have to know about the system. But I'm glad you brought that up, because if you haven't memorized these from childhood, you won't have to know them. If I give you a conversion problem and there is a specific conversion factor you have to know, I'll give it to you. I'm not going to tell you what milli means. You have to know the metric system, but you don't have to memorize specific factors. So you don't have to know there's 2 teaspoons per tablespoon, and so on. Okay? Let's not only do one more example, but let's also do another distance one. Just, we don't want to change too many variables at once. Let's do the same kind of problem, also involving both systems, but let's go in the other direction, from metric to silly. So if I say, for instance, 47.3 gigameters equals how many feet? That's the problem, right? That's a conversion problem. Well, what is step one always?
Right.
You write down the first factor, which is what you're given in the problem, right? Which is what? 47.3 gigameters divided by 1 just to make it a fraction. Step 2 is to make an empty fraction, right? Because your goal right away is simply to get rid of the gigameters, which can't be in your answer. So you need to get rid of those by putting them downstairs. You can go to any other unit you want. If you knew the values to fill in from gigameters to feet, you could do it in one shot, but you don't have that memorized probably. So, notice we're in the metric system. I want, in this case, we're trying to go between metric and silly again, so we're going to still want to take advantage of that special inches to centimeters one that I talked about. But, once again, I don't want you to go from one place in the metric system to another place in the metric system that's not the base in one shot. We're trying to get to centimeters, but until you're well practiced, don't do it. Instead, go from where you are to the base, gigameters to meters. Now, giga means what? Does anyone already know? You haven't memorized these yet, but 10 to the 9th, which is 1 what? 1 billion. 10 to the 6th is a million. 10 to the 9th is a billion. So a giga meter is equal to a billion meters. The big one always gets the smaller number. So I could write this as 1 followed by 9 zeros. I'm just going to say 10 to the 9th, which is the same thing. Right? Then once you're at the base, you can go from the base to where you want to be, which in this case is centimeters, so that you can take advantage of this thing. All right? That allows you to use your knowledge of centi meaning 1/100th. Therefore, there are 100 centimeters in 1 meter. Now we can make the leap between systems, eliminate centimeters, and go to inches. Now, the 2.54 always goes with the centimeters. It has nothing to do with being top or bottom. 2.54 always goes with where the centimeters are. It's the smaller one. It gets the bigger number. Okay, we've eliminated the metric. We're in the silly system. Now we just need to get where we need to be. So we go from inches to feet. This is the one that this is another example. You would have to have this memorized if you grew up with the system, but I would give it to you. 12 inches in 1 foot. Setup tells us that we're correct because everything cancels except feet, which is what the answer should be in. So someone do this. 47.3 times a billion, or 10 to the ninth, however you want to type it in, times 100, divided by 2.54, divided by 12, equals. And tell me when you're done. Anyone do it yet?
1.55 times 10.
Okay, what was the number part before the times 10?
1.55.
Okay, it says more than that, right?
Oh, yeah.
But let's think about this. All of these are exact, so they don't limit you. This has how many significant figures? 3, so your answer has to be 3. And that, you said, was 1.55? Times 10 to the what? Well, what's the next digit? Is it? It's 1, so we don't round up. 1.55 times 10 to the what? 11th? Okay, now, I actually forgot to tell you the final step in this previous example. Even when you get to this answer and write it in scientific notation with units, you're still technically not done. Because there's one important final step that a lot of students skip. And that is to ask yourself, does this answer make any sense? Okay? So let's do that here. By the way, this is not the answer yet, right? That's the magnitude. The full answer would be that number, feet. You have to have the units. So the final step is, does this make any sense? Well, let's think about what we have. We're starting with 47 plus gigameters. Each individual gigameter is a billion meters long. So if you express that in feet, what would you expect the answer to be? Damn big, right? Yeah, because feet are much smaller than gigameters. Well, the answer is damn big. It's times 10 to the 11th. So that's really 155 billion feet. And so it passes the yes, it does make sense step. Don't forget that step, though. Okay. The only way you're ever going to be able to do this well within the minutes you're given for a quiz is to do some practice. So do some practice. All right? That's the last slide, but it's not quite the end of the show. I have 3 more definitions I want to give you before we leave. And I want to distinguish between accuracy, precision, and resolution. They're related in a way, but they're importantly different from each other. Start with accuracy. Does anyone want to define accuracy?
Accuracy is
what it means in your own words?
Except.
Yeah, but in what way? More specifically.
Is it as close to a known model as we can get? Like we know the result.
I'm going to change the word a little bit and just say it's closeness to the truth. So if we're talking about measurements, when you're making a measurement of something, there is a true value, right, that exists, which you're trying to get at by making the measurement. Accuracy is how close you are to the real value, whatever it is. And so when you make a single measurement, that single measurement has an accuracy associated with it. A lot of textbooks like to use, by analogy, the good analogy of throwing darts at a board. Each dart thrown represents a measurement taken. And accuracy is represented by closeness to the bullseye. The bullseye represents the real value. Right? You can throw a dart and hit anywhere, but the closer you are to the bullseye, the higher the accuracy is. That applies to a single measurement and to all any other measurements you make individually. Each individual measurement can have accuracy. All right? Precision is next. And precision has to do with repeatability in measurements. Here it doesn't make sense to talk about a single measurement. Repeated measurements means more than one, right? And so precision is closeness or agreement between multiple measurements of the same thing. Like stepping onto a bathroom scale 5 times in a row. If it's a high precision scale, it should give you the same weight each time. In the dartboard analogy, precision is represented by throwing multiple darts, like 3 darts. How close they land together determines how close they are to each other determines the precision. So just imagine doing that, or maybe you have actually done it. Notice that you can throw 3 darts and not even hit the board, but they can land right next to each other. You can have a tight grouping of darts nowhere near the board. That would mean that you have high precision but low accuracy, right? Because none of them is close to the truth, but they're close to each other. And also, you could throw 3 darts, not one of them hits the board, and they're not near each other. They form a triangle, but if you take the average of those 3, it might be right on the bullseye. So it's possible, in other words, to have low precision and high accuracy. It's kind of unusual. But obviously, the ideal in science is to use an instrument that is both precise and accurate, which would be a tight grouping right around the bullseye. All right, so those are fairly straightforward, I think. Stop me if they're not. The third one is resolution. And this is really why significant figures are a big deal, because of resolution. Resolution, the word, is a noun, right? The verb form of that is resolve, to resolve, which is another word for discriminate. To discriminate means to be able to tell the difference between two things, which is why socially, when we talk about discrimination in a derogatory way, it means there are two groups that we are paying attention to the differences between when we really shouldn't be treating them differently, right? But if you just think about it in terms of marks on a wall, you could put 2 black marks on the wall, and if you stand close enough to the wall, you can easily see that those are 2 separate marks. In other words, you can discriminate them or resolve them. You can resolve them into 2 separate entities that they are. You have high enough resolution, in other words. But if you stand back farther and farther, eventually there will be a distance at which, for your eyes, it will look like one dot on the wall. Because at that point, you have lost resolution. You fail to resolve or discriminate them, so you think it's just one. In terms of a computer screen, which has a resolution, that's the number of pixels, right? If you go to lower resolution, you're really combining a bunch of pixels into one big one, which is what American media do when they don't want you to see a bare breast, right? They'll just pixelate it, make it a bunch of big squares so you can't tell what you're looking at. Well, in terms of numbers, resolution has to do with being able to tell the difference in measurements. If you think about this bathroom scale thing that I keep going back to, if you stand on the bathroom scale, I can ask you what your weight is. You can just read me the value, right? But then I could say, okay, take this postage stamp. Stay on the scale, take this postage stamp and hold it. Now give me the combined weight of you and the postage stamp. Well, you're going to give me the same number, right? Because the scale doesn't have enough resolution to resolve that small amount of change in weight. Right? Similarly, we didn't have enough resolution in our original measurement here of miles to be able to use these very fine numbers on the right. That's why they are insignificant. The calculator comes up with them, but they're not really allowed to be in our measurements because it's giving more resolution than we had to begin with. Does that make sense? Okay. Are you satisfied for the day? I am. It's painful to speak loudly this long. So I'm ready to be done if you are, but if you have questions, ask now or stay after. I'll see you Monday. Yeah, keep them, but bring them each time.